Okay, let me start by saying that this is a collaboration among basically most, if not all, of the public Bermuda grass breeders. So it's been said that selection during crop improvement can lead to a potential for decreasing genetic diversity, right? And that's a problem in breeding because you can have increased vulnerability to biotic and abiotic stresses. You can reduce the ability of the crop to adapt to changes in environment or in pests. And also, you know, you need genetic variation in order to be able to improve a crop. So that can reduce to a decline in the ability to improve the species. In Bermuda grass, the situation in terms of taxonomy, there is 9 different species and 10 varieties of Cynodon. Of course, we know that Tilon, common Bermuda grass, and Cynodon transvalensis, African Bermuda grass, is by far the most commonly used, common directly as a turf grass, and then African in breeding new varieties of Bermuda grass. There's other species that have that are of minor turf importance and that have been used a little bit in breeding. The cross-compatibility between these species varies, and of course the ones that are cross-compatible can be used as sources of traits of interest or genetic variation. Ploidy levels, we have diploids, triploids, and tetraploids in the genus. And then in terms of the breeding history of the cross, of the crop, Bermuda grass goes back probably pretty old compared to other warm season grasses. It was first introduced in the United States from Africa in 1751, so it's been around for a while. And additional collection expeditions to Africa were done in the early 1900s, and I think, you know, have continued throughout the last century. The first sustained turf grass breeding program was established in Tifton in 1946, and then several other programs were established thereafter, you know, of notable importance. Oklahoma State University has one, Mississippi has one, Florida also has one. Then in the 80s, the USDA started declining its funding for turf grass breeding research. And at the same time, and maybe because of that, private breeding companies started to ramp up their efforts in producing Bermuda grass cultivars for the seeded market, turf grass Bermuda grass for the seeded market. If we look at the breeding schemes that have been used in Bermuda grass breeding, basically it varies depending on what type of cultivars you're talking about. For the clonally propagated cultivars, it's a mix of a lot of different things. You have the model of crossing common Bermuda grass with African Bermuda grass to develop interspecific hybrids. You know, that's one model that has definitely changed the turf industry as a whole. There's also cultivars that come just from breeding within common Bermuda grass. There's also selections, selected genotypes from mutations of released cultivars, that's also very common. There's also been induced mutations used in breeding, and then of course selections from natural collections. And then for seeded cultivars, you know, of course since fertility is very important, most of them come just from within common Bermuda grass, breeding within common, and probably to some extent there's also some that are selections in natural collections. So because we have all these breeding schemes, it is expected that you're going to have a lot of genetic variation among Bermuda grass cultivars. There was a study done in 2010 by Yangxi Wu's group where they looked at genetic diversity using SSR markers, looking at just clonally propagated cultivars. And they have found good levels of diversity. There was a little bit of clustering by a breeding program that released the cultivars, but in general, we have good diversity. Now, the question we had, and this is a small research program, but project by one of my grad students, was, okay, so we have good diversity, but if we put a timeline to it, does that look good? Do we have been able to maintain genetic diversity through decades of cultivar development, or do we have more at the beginning, and as we try to develop more seeded cultivars for the market, are we declining genetic diversity in more recent time periods? So with that in mind, we started this project looking at how science-based turf breeding had an impact on genetic diversity over decades of Bermuda grass improvement. And the idea was to use SSR markers to evaluate levels of allelic diversity in Bermuda grass cultivars released from 1950, basically the first cultivar release, all the way to 2016. And to see if there's differences in allelic diversity in the different decades of release. So for these, we collected 85 cultivars total. I don't expect you to even be able to see that table. Forget about it. That's actually half of the table. The idea there is to show you that there was a lot of different germplasm that we looked at. There's some that we were not able to acquire because they're very old cultivars, and basically they have just disappeared from germplasm collections, which is kind of sad. We only looked at turf type. We didn't include any forage Bermuda grasses. And these were gathered from germplasm collections of pretty much everybody in the country. I mean, public programs, private programs. Kevin Morris was a huge help in obtaining materials that had been sent to NTED. And then Green also helped with some of these materials. So forget about the table, but something that I do want you to keep in mind is that we divided cultivars in four different groupings. The one that was of most interest was decade of release, right, to see changes through time. And based on that, we had the pre-1980s. We just grouped everything that was developed before the 80s into one group because there wasn't enough early cultivars to really separate them all the way into decades. And then everything after 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. And you can see that the number of cultivars in each one of those decades varies. Then we decided to, you know, since we had the materials, why not look at it in different ways? And we also separated them based on what was the program type that developed the cultivar. And based on that, we had, you know, if they came from a public program or from a private company. Then also by propagation method, seeded cultivars versus vegetative or commonly propagated cultivars. And then also by species, those were, that were just common Bermuda grass, and then those that were common by African hybrids. We collected DNA. I'm not going to go over the details of this just to save time, but we ran SSRs on sequencing gels. And then for the NAID analysis, we looked at standard statistics for each primer pair. What was the total number of alleles that was amplified? How many of those were rare alleles? How many were frequent alleles? What was the polymorphic information content of the primers? It basically tells you how discriminative that primer is. We looked at genetic similarity between each pair of cultivars. And then because the groupings that we formed had different numbers of cultivars, we used the FOO permutation test. This is a permutation test that basically looks at, gives you the statistic, the significance of the of testing groups of different size. That's what it does. We looked at analysis of molecular variants, did a principal coordinate analysis, and then also looked at population structure. So moving on to results, for SSR polymorphism, we were able to amplify 433 alleles with 37 primer pairs, so lots of alleles to look at. Most primers amplified just one loci, but there was a few that amplified two, and actually one of them that amplified three loci, so lots of information on that one. The number of alleles amplified per primer pair ranged from 2 to 25. So there was one primer that actually amplified 25 different alleles, which is amazing, with an average of 9. And then the peak values for primers range from 0.03 to 91 with an average of 35, which is what has been reported in previous studies, pretty close. So looking at allelic frequencies, they range from 0.01 to 0.88 with an average of 0.22. And you can see in that graph that, you know, it's pretty skewed to the low allele frequency number. So there's a lot of variation among the genotypes that we analyzed. Actually, 75 alleles were rare alleles that were present in a frequency of less than 5%, and we had no common alleles. So lots of diversity. Now, for the interesting part, right, looking at allelic counts by decades, you can see that, and I cannot find, oh, there's the cursor, I found it, yay. You can see that there was a little bit of a dip in the number of alleles in the 80s, but then it increases steadily to the 2000s, and that's the decade that has the most alleles present in the cultivars that from releasing that decade. But one thing to notice is that actually the number of alleles declines in the 2010s. Of course, we have to keep in mind that the decade is not over, so there's still time for, you know, catching up with the 2000s. If we look at the other grouping types, public cultivars have more diversity than private cultivars, vegetative more than seeded, and hybrid, and that's probably expected, right, given that these are interspecific hybrids, hybrids have more alleles than common Bermuda grass cultivars. Now, that's just numbers, right, the raw numbers. are those differences significant? And that's what we use the food permutation test for. So for each one of these groups, here's the differentiation by decade. So here are the decades on this axis and on this axis, and each one of these comparisons is the pairwise comparisons of the 80s versus the pre-80s, for example. And you can see that in the 80s, there's 29 less allele, therefore the negative number, than in the pre-80s. But that difference is not significant. Now, as we go down, the 90s has 100 more alleles than the 80s, and that's a significant increase. The 2000s, 120 more alleles, and that's also significant. The 2010s, 41 more alleles, and that's also significant. So steady increase, you know, the decrease in the 80s is not significant, and then after that, there have been steady increases in comparison to the original, you know, to the early times of plant breeding, of turfgrass breeding. Now, something to also look at is that if you compare the 2010s versus the 90s and 2000s, there have been significant decreases in allele numbers. So, you know, those counts are significantly less. But again, the decade is not over, so we'll see what happens. Private cultivars have 12 less alleles than public. Vegetative have 11 more alleles than seeded. And common have 23 less alleles than hybrids. And those are all those differences are significant. For relationships among cultivars, we use this method that was published by Donini et al., where you basically trace a polygon again around the joining together the cultivars on the extreme ranges of diversity in a way. And based on the area of those polygons, you can compare the amount of genetic diversity included in that decade. And you can see here the 80s is right here, and it's kind of smaller. The pre-80s, excuse me, is kind of smaller here. The 80s is small, and it's also interesting that it's kind of shifted. The centroid is shifted, so there's a difference not only in the quantity of diversity, but also in the quality of diversity. And then the 90s and the 2000s are much larger than the 80s. So again, the same thing, genetic diversity has been increased. But the 2000s are kind of smaller, so same thing. Looking at population structure, the number of populations that were identified were 3. And the important thing is that you see good representation. So each one of the populations are red, blue, and green. And you see good representation of all of those 3 populations through decades of release, except that the 2000s is missing a little bit of the blue population. So we need to see what happens in future releases by the end of this decade. So in conclusion, at the gene and population levels, both diversity has experienced significant changes in Bermuda grass breeding. There was a dip in the 80s, and I wonder if that decline can be maybe explained by the decline in efforts from public breeding programs, from USDA, I mean. And then there has been an increase thereafter. And I think maybe that can be explained by the success in interspecific breeding, the development of clonally propagated hybrid Bermuda grasses. The 2000s have more or maintained or more allelic counts than the pre-80s at 44 out of 48 loci, so lots of more diversity than when we started. And the 2010 seems less diverse, but the decade is not over yet. So it's going to be really interesting to do this, you know, in 2021 if we're still around, right, and see what has happened then. Overall, Bermuda grass breeders have done a great job at increasing genetic diversity through decades of Bermuda grass breeding. Good job, guys. But, you know, if the 2010s trends stick, we need to continue efforts to incorporate exotic materials to, you know, increase diversity into breeding populations. And with that, I'll finish, and I'll acknowledge all the people that were involved in getting us cultivar samples for this study. It really took a village, and everybody was lovely at helping us. Young Bifu helped us with the statistical analysis for the permutation test, and the funding for this project was provided by the NC State Turf Center. Now I'll be happy to take questions.